chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may dab in the middle of it.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. We've got quite a bit going on this week, and Trump is traveling all over the country and doing attracting very large crowds. And I think Joe Biden is off today. We've had this breaking scandal that's been coming out of Hunter Biden's notebook computer that he left to have repaired, and he never went back, and then the repairman, you know, it defaulted to his ownership there. That's the way the story goes. But anyway, not only that is going on, but other people that were indicted and convicted on other money improprieties, I could say, that were associated with Hunter Biden, they're turning state's evidence on some emails that they had out of their personal email. And Peter Schweitzer will comment on that a little bit later. But first, I want to play the organizer of the Count on Us Women's March in D.C. And this is what she had to say. This is just part of her speech today in Washington, D.C. Here we go now.
So I want to welcome y'all to D.C., right? My name is Nene Teller. I'm a native Washingtonian. Born and raised in the most marginalized part of the city, Southeast. Holler at Southeast. Southeast out here? Southeast, they ain't out here because they don't believe in national organizers. But it's okay, because I'm going to be here for them to represent them. I'm a co-organizer with Black Lives Matter D.C. I rise up every day with the spirit of my ancestor, Harriet Tubman, walking on top of the railroad tracks, being unapologetically black. It is my duty to love, support, and protect black people. Therefore, I'm intentional when I show up to dismantle systems that were not built for us. Patriarchy, gotta go. Imperialism, gotta go. Capitalism, gotta go. It's time for us to radically dismantle a system that dehumanizes and devalues black people by finally confronting the root of the problem. Our nation's legacy of enslavement and white supremacy. We must collectively work to elevate. Somebody doing something to my thing. Hold one second. We're going to get it back together. Y'all, look, y'all, I'm being honest. I voted this at 6:30 because Sebby right here, I was there. I ain't had time, but I'm here for y'all. We keep us safe. We must collectively work to elevate the voices and needs of those who have been directly impacted by our current system and invest in solutions that build on the hope and resilience of our communities. As the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. is a lightning rod for national organizing, but it's also home to the more than 700,000 people, 47% of whom are black, including thriving local movement of committed activists, organizers, and community members struggling with issues on local level. Shout out to my fam. They out here, y'all. They out here. Who keep us safe? Who keep us safe? Police in D.C. don't keep us safe. Not 32 independent police stations here in D.C. and they don't keep us safe. We keep us safe. For those who don't know, Washington, D.C. is not a state, which means we lack the power to make basic decisions about our city or hold elected representatives responsible. D.C.'s systematic disenfranchisement come out of legacy of racism and bigotry. When we vote, our legislation is held right there. I want y'all to pay attention. That's why our legislation is done. But we don't get to make the decision. It got to go to Congress. So Congress decides what we do here in D.C. So be clear, D.C. is not a state. When national organizers when your national organizations outsiders ignore the knowledge, needs, and desires of people who live here, you are playing to a larger, recolonial framework that we live in every day. Therefore, I challenge you to help us. Help us fight. Help us fight for statehood. Help us fight to decrim sex work. Help us fight for the Breathe Act. Help us fight to end cash bail. Help us fight to defund the police.
She says in her speech, and I'm just giving you a clip of that, defund the police. And we know that over the years that these Marxist communist revolutions always go in and try to destroy the police force before they can start taking over other elements of the, so the ideology of a Marxist communist, and we know that Black Lives Matter, one or more of their founding members, has admitted to being trained in Marxist communist training. So indoctrinated, you could say. And so this is really, really unfolding before our eyes. We've got to get a handle on it. Next is Tucker Carlson laying out about 8 minutes of some of the problems. New York Post published an article recently, and it really laid out some indictment type of evidence against Joe Biden and Hunter. Here we go with that now.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. There's an awful lot of noise in the news right now, as you would expect. There's an election coming 3 weeks away. Everyone wants to get a blow in before it's too late. But not everything you hear is untrue, and not every story is complex. At the heart of the growing Biden-Ukraine scandal, for example, is a very straightforward question. Did Joe Biden subvert American foreign policy in order to enrich his own family? In 2015, Joe Biden was the sitting vice president of the United States. Included in his portfolio were U.S. relations with the nation of Ukraine. So at that moment, Vice President Joe Biden had more influence over the Ukrainian government and the Ukrainian economy than any other person on the globe outside of Eastern Europe. Biden's younger son, Hunter, knew that. He hoped to get rich from his father's influence. Emails published yesterday by the New York Post, documents apparently taken directly from Hunter Biden's own laptop, tell some of that story. Tonight, we'd like to bring you some more detail. We have another batch of emails, some exclusive to the show. We believe they also came from Hunter Biden's laptop. We can't prove that they did. We haven't examined that computer. But every detail that we could check, including Hunter Biden's personal email address at the time, suggests they are authentic. As we told you last night, if these emails are fake at the time, suggests they are authentic. As we told you last night, if these emails are fake, this is the most complex and sophisticated hoax in history. It almost seems beyond human capacity. The Biden campaign clearly believes these emails are real. They have not said otherwise. We sent the body of them to Hunter Biden's attorney and never heard back. So with that in mind, here's what we have learned. On November 2, 2015, at 4:30 in the afternoon, a Burisma executive called Vadim Pozharsky emailed Hunter Biden and his business partner, Devin Archer. The purpose of the email, Pozharsky explains, is to, quote, be on the same page about our final goals, including but not limited to a concrete course of action. So what did Burisma want exactly? Well, good PR, for starters. The executive wanted, quote, high-ranking U.S. officials to express their, quote, positive opinion of Burisma. And then he wanted the administration to act on Burisma's behalf, quote, the scope of work should also include organization of a visit of a number of widely recognized and influential current and or former U.S. policymakers to Ukraine in November, aiming to conduct meetings with and bring positive signals and message of support to Burisma. The goal, the executive explained, was to, quote, close down any cases slash pursuits against the head of Burisma in Ukraine. So that couldn't be clearer what they wanted. Burisma wanted Hunter Biden's father to get their company out of legal trouble with the Ukrainian government. And that's exactly what happened. 1 month later to the day, on December 2, 2015, Hunter Biden received a notice from a Washington PR firm called Blue Star Strategies. Blue Star Strategies apparently had been hired to lobby the administration on Ukraine. This show has exclusively obtained that email. Hello all, it began. This morning, the White House hosted a conference call regarding the vice president's upcoming trip to Ukraine. Attached is a memo from the Blue Star Strategies team with the minutes of the call, which outlined the trip's agenda and addressed several questions regarding U.S. policy toward Ukraine, end quote. So here you have a PR firm involved in an official White House foreign policy call. How could that happen? Good question. But it worked. Days later, Joe Biden flew to Ukraine and did exactly what his son wanted. The vice president gave a speech slamming the very Ukrainian law enforcement official who was tormenting Burisma, the exact guy. If the Ukrainian government doesn't fire its top prosecutor, a man called Viktor Shokin, Biden explained, the administration withhold $1 billion in American aid. Now, Ukraine is a poor country, so they had no choice but to obey. Biden's bullying worked. He bragged about it later.
I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to the press conference. I said, I'm not going to, we're not going to give you the $1 billion. They said, you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said. I said, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting the $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I looked, I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Well, son of a bitch. Got fired.
Now, Joe Biden gave that speech before the Council on Foreign Relations, so we pretend as if what he said was normal and officially authorized. This is how things are done. That's not true at all. This is bizarre. And the amazing thing about the video you just saw is that no one in that audience of Harvard graduates and other assorted smart people asked the glaringly obvious question. Why was the vice president of the United States threatening a tiny country like Ukraine to fire its top prosecutor? That doesn't seem like a vice president's role. Well, now we know why. Viktor Shokin has signed an affidavit affirming that he was, in fact, investigating Burisma at the moment Joe Biden had him removed. Shokin said that before he was fired, administration officials pressured him into dropping the case against Burisma. He would not do that, so Joe Biden canned him. That's how things really work in Washington. Your son's got a lucrative consulting deal with a Ukrainian energy company. You tailor American foreign policy to help make him rich. Our foreign policy. Even at the State Department, possibly the most cynical agency in government, this seemed shockingly brazen. During the impeachment proceedings last fall, a State Department official called George Kent said it was widely known in Washington that the Bidens were up to something sleazy in Ukraine. Quote, I was on a call with somebody on the vice president's staff, and I raised my concerns that I had heard that Hunter Biden was on the board of Burisma. This, George Kent noted, could create a perception of a conflict of interest. So how did the vice president's office respond to this concern? Well, according to George Kent, quote, the message that I recall hearing back was that the vice president's son, Beau, was dying of cancer, and there was no further bandwidth to deal with family-related issues at the time. Family-related issues. This was America's foreign policy being tailored to Joe Biden's son. 5 years later, Joe Biden still has not been forced to explain why he fired Ukraine's top prosecutor at precisely the moment his son was being paid to get him to fire Ukraine's top prosecutor. Nor has Joe Biden addressed whether or not he personally benefited from the Burisma contract. But there are tantalizing hints. Last night, former Mayor Rudy Giuliani published what he said was yet another email from Hunter Biden's laptop. It's a note to one of his children. It's sad and it's fraught and it's personal, and we're not going to quote it at length. But at the end, there's this, quote, don't worry, unlike your grandfather, I won't make you give me half your salary. What does that mean exactly? Well, we don't know. There may be more detail in the laptop, but unfortunately we don't have access to that. But the question remains, how has Joe Biden lived in extravagance all these years on a government salary? No one has ever answered that question, and the tech monopolies are working hard to make certain no one ever does. This morning, the New York Post published another story based on the emails. This one describes a business venture Hunter Biden was working on in China. The email reads this way, quote, at the moment, there's a provisional agreement that the equity will be distributed as follows. 10 held by Hunter for the big guy. The big guy. Is the big guy Joe Biden? If so, how much did Joe Biden get? And how much of that came from the communist Chinese government? Those are real questions. This man could be elected president in 3 weeks. But Twitter doesn't want you to wonder. It won't allow you to ask those questions. Twitter restricted the New York Post story as, quote, unsafe, like it was a lawn dart or a defective circular saw. And that was enough for the Biden campaign. It was enormously useful. All day today, they deflected questions about Joe Biden's subversion of our country's foreign policy by invoking Twitter's ban on the New York Post story. So the tech monopolies censor information to help their candidate. The candidate uses that censorship to dismiss the story. One hand washes the other. Watch.
This Twitter blocking of those, tweets, you could say, was done probably, and this is just my speculation, by very young people working for Twitter and for Facebook. I think there was blocking there also. But they didn't really, they weren't pro-Trump. They were probably pro-Biden. And they felt like, that those were scurrilous accusations that were unproven at the time, and they weren't going to allow it. But this put them into being a publisher and an editor of the content, which they would lose the Section 230 protections of a social network company. So there's a coming up next is an interview, very good interview about this subject with Ted Cruz on CNBC. Here we go next.
Thank you for having me. It's great to join you.
So I'd like to kind of pare back and kind of really get to the core of this issue here, because there's so much confusion around what big tech can and can't do and should or shouldn't do. The essence of the issue comes down to whether these are platform companies or publishers, right? If they're platform companies, they basically have to be an open forum. If they're, and they get Section 230 protections for that. If they're publishers, which intervening in political speech looks like being a publisher, then they don't get those protections. Is that a good way to kind of look at this issue? And what happens now, do you think?
Well, I think that is a good way to frame it. And Section 230 is a special immunity from liability that Congress passed decades ago, really at the start of the Internet, to try to encourage the growth of the Internet. At the time, it was a fledgling and nascent industry. Now these are the corporate behemoths across the globe. It's a very different dynamic. And when Section 230 was passed, big tech was providing a neutral public forum. They aren't anymore, and we've been seeing big tech get more and more aggressive on censoring and silencing voices they disagree with. That being said, the last 24 hours marked a dramatic escalation, and they've crossed a new line. It started yesterday, where both Twitter and Facebook blocked a story from the New York Post alleging evidence of corruption concerning Joe Biden and his son and Ukraine. And the New York Post wrote the article, and Twitter prohibited anyone on the platform from tweeting or posting the article. In fact, they blocked the New York Post itself from tweeting their own article. Then today, the Twitter doubled down. There was a second story from the New York Post alleging corruption again in the Biden family, this time concerning communist China, and they're receiving millions of dollars mm-hmm. from communist China. Twitter once again blocks anyone from tweeting that story. And it's the first time I'm aware of big tech being brazen enough to directly censor a major media outlet and to block anyone from communicating a story published on a major media outlet.
Right. And Senator, here's the thing about this that's so fascinating to me. Are they not then inviting the loss of Section 230 protections? So if they're acting like publishing companies, aren't they going to be stripped of those protections? Section 230 only applies to online platforms that are not moderating content. The only exemption you get is if the content is literally obscene or otherwise offensive. Offensive does not mean political speech. So don't these actions mean they shouldn't be covered under Section 230?
Well, I think that's absolutely right, and I think you're seeing growing congressional skepticism of the monopoly power exercised by big tech and their willingness to abuse that power. And so this afternoon I announced, along with Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham, we together announced that on Tuesday the Judiciary Committee will vote to subpoena Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, to testify before us next Friday and explain why Twitter is engaged in active election interference, that they are actively trying to suppress major media coverage. Look, the New York Post has the fourth largest circulation of any newspaper in America, and Twitter is preventing anyone from posting now two stories putting forth evidence of corruption of Joe Biden. And by the way, if anyone disputes the evidence, that's actually what free speech is all about. You know, we were talking about Section 230 a second ago. If the New York Post's stories turn out to be wrong, they can be sued for defamation. They can be hauled into court, and they're subject to
right.
damages.
Exactly.
Twitter isn't. Twitter gets immunity under Section 230 that the New York Post and every other media outlet doesn't get.
Right, and that was an extension of the fact that back in the day, libraries and bookshops and
right.
newsstands couldn't be sued for defamation. So these platforms exist at scale because they're basically seen as giant newsstands. They're treated the same way under the law. But if they're not acting in that same way, they lose those protections, don't they? I mean, my question is, who is it, a prosecutor now? I mean, what next steps would be taken to say, okay, you are literally claiming that you are acting in a manner that a publishing person would act. Therefore, you could be liable for all the content on your platforms. And again, investors, the shares are only down about 2% today, but this would potentially undermine their entire existence. So the issues are potentially enormous here if these companies say, yes, we're publishers. Wouldn't they lose those protections?
Well, I think there are a host of avenues it could come from. It's not likely to come from a prosecutor because it's not likely to be a criminal action, but it is likely to come from, number one, trial lawyers suing them for content, for decisions they're making that are biased and unfair. And I expect trial lawyers will be making the argument that they've abandoned the protections of Section 230. But number two, from the Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission, and I have spoken repeatedly with the Attorney General, the Deputy Attorney General, the Assistant Attorney General for Antitrust, the Chairman of the FTC, the President of the United States, the Vice President, all about directing the enforcement authority of the administration to go after big tech and stop them from abusing their monopoly power. And they are monopolies under the antitrust laws. They are abusing their monopoly power, and they are doing it to censor views they happen to disagree with, to silence those they happen to disagree with, and now, just 19 days out from an election, to deliberately and blatantly interfere in the election.
Up next is a interview with John Solomon, and he has some additional information for us that implicates President Barack Obama in much of this scandal, this spygate against Trump. But anyway, we're going to put that up next, and then we'll follow that up with some concluding commentary from different broadcasters. Here we go with John Solomon interview.
So we, during the impeachment hearing, we did a lot of research to try to figure out what was really going on. Well, one of the guys who was the leading voice and way ahead of anyone else and still is today is John Solomon. He's the author of a new book called Fallout. He is also the CEO and editor-in-chief of Just the News. If you don't have this page bookmarked, you should. Just the News is a new news site that John has put together, and it's really good. Welcome, Mr. Solomon. How are you, sir?
Great to be with you, Glenn. Thank you so much, and thanks for that introduction.
You bet, you bet. So I want to talk to you about a couple of things. First of all, let me just start with that obvious question. How can the FBI do such a great job on the Whitmer plot and yet still be completely seemingly in the dark about Antifa, and we haven't had any action on the Russian collusion story?
Yeah, listen, I think that's why people see it, this dual justice of system. We've seen it throughout. You know, Mike Flynn gets charged with lying for a lie he didn't tell, and Andy McCabe doesn't get charged for a lie he did tell. All throughout the last 4 years, we've seen this dual system of justice. There's one for everyday Americans, and it seems conservatives, and there's another one for the Department of Justice. And at the end of the day, what you're seeing, these institutions, the FBI, the CIA, the NSC, they're all protecting themselves instead of telling the American people the truth and holding those accountable who carried out, you know, the greatest dirty political trick in American history.
So Donald Trump is surrounded by people that, you know, you could call deep staters, people that are just covering their own ass and don't want anything to change. I don't know how one man can do this, but is there a chance we clean this up? Because if not, we don't have really a republic. We don't have one.
Yeah, listen, that is the real question, right? And I do think that the president remains determined. I think you're going to see the president do something very dramatic in the next couple of days, which is no longer wait for the federal agencies to release the documents he's ordered multiple times since May 19th. I think he's going to release them himself. I have a story up on Just the News right now that has the 40 documents that Trump should still release that would really finish the story, complete the picture, show who did what, who should be held accountable. And I bet you the president has the moxie to just go do this himself.
He's
no longer going to wait for the agency. But the other thing that has to happen, those who committed crimes have to be prosecuted.
Yes.
Or this will become the new norm. I know people are frustrated by Durham and Barr, but everything I'm seeing is a very serious, real criminal case. I think they're getting very close to making bigger, more dramatic indictments. It may not happen before the election, which is tragic for the American voter, but I do think there's going to be some additional accountability meted out between now and the end of the year. But not knowing what happened before you go into the 2020 election, what happened in the 2016 election, is a travesty, and it shows that the deep state already won.
So can you tell me, Trump said, yes, I think it was yesterday, that they have enough evidence to go all the way to Barack Obama. I believe you do with that, January 5th meeting, where it's all handwritten notes. I mean, that makes this way beyond Watergate, the biggest probably presidential scandal in American history. Do we have the evidence to do that?
Listen, I wrote a column a little bit ago that identified five instances where Barack Obama is directly involved in the investigation. We just had a new one come out this past week with the declassification where we find out Barack Obama is briefed by John Brennan in July 2016 that Hillary Clinton is running this dirty trick on Russia against Donald Trump. She's going to try to portray him as having been involved in the hacking of the DNC documents to get rid of her own political liabilities. Barack Obama was in the know from beginning to end. Whether that being in the know and encouraging it and cheerleading it on is enough to be a crime, it depends what actions are taken. But make no mistake, he was read in, he was cheerleading, particularly when it came to Mike Flynn. Remember the notes that we have saying he told the FBI, put your best people on it. This is after the FBI concluded there was no criminality.
Correct.
So Barack Obama's a cheerleader. He's in the know. He's read in all the way through. If he committed a crime, we'll have to see what the evidence is. But make no mistake, he was in on this dirty trick from start to finish.
So let me switch gears to Andriy Telezenko. People don't know who he really is and should. Former Ukrainian diplomat. He's been working with the Senate to expose the Bidens in Ukraine. He has been, I think, an instrumental source all the way along. He had been trying to testify in front of Congress, and then they keep stopping it for some reason. And now, we just heard from him yesterday, he is in hiding, and he has had his U.S. visa revoked by the State Department. Why?
Yes. Well, I'm going to answer that question next week with more detail, but I think there is something very explosive that he provided to the Senate last May and June. That would be one of the biggest embarrassments to the Obama-Biden administration. And once that got known inside the Senate committee, the Senate Democrats and their friends in the deep state of the State Department executed a strategy to smear him, just like they did Devin Nunes, just like they did me during impeachment. We can go through all the people who had the courage to tell the truth, and they get attacked in ways of extraordinary intensity, ruining their reputations, their careers, other things. Next week, I will be able to answer, because I have the actual documents, what it was that Andriy Telezenko turned over to the Senate that got the Democrats alarmed. And I think when people see that, you'll see that the dirty trick that we've been talking about, which clearly involves the FBI, clearly involves Hillary Clinton's campaign, clearly Barack Obama's in the know, clearly the FBI's in the know, the CIA's in the know. There's going to be some more people in the know, and it's going to take it right into the Obama-Biden White House. But I got to finish up the reporting on that, and I hope next week we'll be able to tell the American people the piece of evidence that was the hair trigger that scared the Democrats into beginning to attack Telezenko. Let's keep in mind, I wrote a story a couple weeks ago. Andriy Telezenko was the best buddy of the Obama White House. He was constantly meeting with people like Eric Tremella and Liz Zentos, people right under Joe Biden and Barack Obama. They only turned on him when he gave up the goods on something that I think will make everybody shocked to see next week.
Well, at least those of us in the right, in media will be shocked, but I don't know if it's going to, I mean, look, that Brennan is just dismissing and laughing about, and CNN is laughing about, you know, his handwritten notes.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big smoking gun.
You know what I think? I've come to conclude. For a long time, I was angry at my profession for the willful blindness, the lack of neutrality, the picking of winners. But there's something amazing that I've seen in the last few months. And it's really because of pioneers like you and Sean and Fox News, all the people that created new websites to tell the other side of the story that gets ignored. These stories are getting around the mainstream media now, and they are seeping into the American public. We had a poll last week, like 60% of Americans believe Joe Biden corruptly used his office to enrich his family. Now, you couldn't have gotten that from reading the New York Times or the Washington Post or CNN or any of the mainstream media, but these stories are seeping around the American public because of people who had the courage like you to create your own platform, or myself, or, you know, the Fox News. It's getting around. The filter is broken. The media can no longer trap these stories.
Lou Dobbs is a fine person, and he speaks the truth. And here we have a very, very encompassing interview with Lou Dobbs. Here we go now.
So we, during the impeachment hearing, we did a lot of research to try to figure out what was really going on. Well, one of the guys who was the leading voice and way ahead of anyone else, and still is today, is John Solomon. He's the author of a new book called Fallout. He is also the CEO and editor-in-chief of Just the News. If you don't have this page bookmarked, you should. Just the News is a new news site that John has put together, and it's really good. Welcome, Mr. Solomon. How are you, sir?
Great to be with you, Glenn. Thank you so much, and thanks for that introduction.
You bet, you bet. So I want to talk to you about a couple of things. First of all, let me just start with that obvious question. How can the FBI do such a great job on the Whitmer plot and yet still be completely seemingly in the dark about Antifa, and we haven't had any action on the Russian collusion story?
Yeah, listen, I think that's why people see it, this dual justice of system. We've seen it throughout. You know, Mike Flynn gets charged with lying for a lie he didn't tell, and Andy McCabe doesn't get charged for a lie he did tell. All throughout the last 4 years, we've seen this dual system of justice. There's one for everyday Americans, and it seems conservatives, and there's another one for the Department of Justice. And at the end of the day, what you're seeing, these institutions, the FBI, the CIA, the NSC, they're all protecting themselves instead of telling the American people the truth and holding those accountable who carried out, you know, the greatest dirty political trick in American history.
So Donald Trump is surrounded by people that, you know, you could call deep staters, people that are just covering their own ass and don't want anything to change. I don't know how one man can do this, but is there a chance we clean this up? Because if not, we don't have really a republic. We don't have one.
Yeah, listen, that is the real question, right? And I do think that the president remains determined. I think you're going to see the president do something very dramatic in the next couple of days, which is no longer wait for the federal agencies to release the documents he's ordered multiple times since May 19th. I think he's going to release them himself. I have a story up on Just the News right now that has the 40 documents that Trump should still release that would really finish the story, complete the picture, show who did what, who should be held accountable. And I bet you the president has the moxie to just go do this himself.
He's
no longer going to wait for the agency. But the other thing that has to happen, those who committed crimes have to be prosecuted.
Yes.
Or this will become the new norm. I know people are frustrated by Durham and Barr, but everything I'm seeing is a very serious, real criminal case. I think they're getting very close to making more dramatic indictments. It may not happen before the election, which is tragic for the American voter, but I do think there's going to be some additional accountability meted out between now and the end of the year. But not knowing what happened before you go into the 2020 election, what happened in the 2016 election, is a travesty, and it shows that the deep state already won.
So can you tell me, Trump said, yes, I think it was yesterday, that they have enough evidence to go all the way to Barack Obama. I believe you do with that, January 5th meeting where it's all handwritten notes. I mean, that makes this way beyond Watergate, the biggest probably presidential scandal in American history. Do we have the evidence to do that?
listen, I wrote a column a little bit ago that identified five instances where Barack Obama is directly involved in the investigation. We just had a new one come out this past week with the declassification where we find out Barack Obama is briefed by John Brennan in July 2016 that Hillary Clinton is running this dirty trick on Russia against Donald Trump. She's going to try to portray him as having been involved in the hacking of the DNC documents to get rid of her own political liabilities. Barack Obama was in the know from beginning to end. Whether that being in the know and encouraging it and cheerleading it on is enough to be a crime, it depends what actions are taken. But make no mistake, he was read in, he was cheerleading, particularly when it came to Mike Flynn. Remember the notes that we have saying he told the FBI, put your best people on it. This is after the FBI concluded there was no criminality.
Correct.
So Barack Obama's a cheerleader. He's in the know. He's read in all the way through. If he committed a crime, we'll have to see what the evidence is. But make no mistake, he was in on this dirty trick from start to finish.
So let me switch gears to Andriy Telezenko. People don't know who he really is and should. Former Ukrainian diplomat. He's been working with the Senate to expose the Bidens in Ukraine. He has been, I think, an instrumental source all the way along. He had been trying to testify in front of Congress, and then they keep stopping it for some reason. And now, we just heard from him yesterday, he is in hiding, and he has had his U.S. visa revoked by the State Department. Why?
Yes. Well, I'm going to answer that question next week with more detail, but I think there is something very explosive that he provided to the Senate last May and June. That would be one of the biggest embarrassments to the Obama-Biden administration. And once that got known inside the Senate committee, the Senate Democrats and their friends in the deep state of the State Department executed a strategy to smear him, just like they did Devin Nunes, just like they did me during impeachment. We can go through all the people who had the courage to tell the truth, and they get attacked in ways of extraordinary intensity, ruining their reputations, their careers, other things. Next week, I will be able to answer, because I have the actual documents, what it was that Andriy Telezenko turned over to the Senate that got the Democrats alarmed. And I think when people see that, you'll see that the dirty trick that we've been talking about, which clearly involves the FBI, clearly involves Hillary Clinton's campaign, clearly Barack Obama's in the know, clearly the FBI's in the know, the CIA's in the know. There's going to be some more people in the know, and it's going to take it right into the Obama-Biden White House. But I got to finish up the reporting on that, and I hope next week we'll be able to tell the American people the piece of evidence that was the hair trigger that scared the Democrats into beginning to attack Telezenko. Let's keep in mind, I wrote a story a couple weeks ago. Andriy Telezenko was the best buddy of the Obama White House. He was constantly meeting with people like Eric Tremella and Liz Zentos, people right under Joe Biden and Barack Obama. They only turned on him when he gave up the goods on something that I think will make everybody shocked to see next week.
Well, at least those of us in the right, in media will be shocked, but I don't know if it's gonna, I mean, look, that Brennan is just dismissing and laughing about, and CNN is laughing about, you know, his handwritten notes.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big smoking gun.
You know what I think? I've come to conclude, and for a long time I was angry at my profession for the willful blindness, the lack of neutrality, the picking of winners, but there's something amazing that I've seen in the last few months, and it's really because of pioneers like you and Sean and Fox News, all the people that created new websites to tell the other side of the story that gets ignored. These stories are getting around the mainstream media now, and they are seeping into the American public. We had a poll last week, like 60% of Americans believe Joe Biden corruptly used his office to enrich his family. Now, you couldn't have gotten that from reading the New York Times or the Washington Post or CNN or any of the mainstream media. But these stories are seeping around the American public because of people who had the courage like you to create your own platform, or myself, or, you know, the Fox News. It's getting around. The filter is broken. The media can no longer trap these stories.
Coming up next is an excellent interview Lou Dobbs has with Rudy Giuliani, and it's concerning the Ukraine and a lot of these different new revelations. Here we go next.
But China Joe isn't really that middle class anymore. According to Joe and Jill Biden's 2016 tax returns, they made almost $400,000. But in the 4 years since Joe left the White House, well, Joe's made $17 million. Where did all that money come from? Some of it may have come from speaking fees. He has a very good arrangement, and he had a nice book deal. But a lot of it is opaque. It's hidden. from the American people. The Bidens used Delaware financial privacy laws to set up two S corporations called Self Capri and Giacapa, both worth $14 million. Now, many use S corporations as perfectly legal to avoid paying Social Security or Medicare taxes. The sources of such revenue can't often be traced. The Bidens used $2.7 million of that money to buy a second house in Delaware in June 2017. Modest Joe, a month before they bought the house, Hunter Biden was planning a business venture with a Chinese energy firm that includes tin held by H for the big guy. So did Hunter, was he funneling money to his father through the S corporations? It's hard to tell, but many are wondering and many now are digging. Last month's report by Senator Ron Johnson's committee points out that Hunter Biden hid a lot of his money through several limited partnerships. So much remains hidden from the American people by middle-class Joe and the Biden family, including his public his years of public service at the University of Delaware, sealed away there. Public service, but very private records. Joining us tonight is President Trump's personal attorney, former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, also host of the podcast Common Sense and Chat with the Mayor show on WABC Radio in New York. Rudy, great to see you. And this is
good to see you.
Extraordinary expose, and it is so powerful, important that the American public know what's happening. Your role in it has been central, and that of your attorney. Can you quickly tell us how you came to be at the center of this?
Sure.
And that these got to the New York Post.
You know what? I'll tell you what convinces me that this is very damaging. All they do is attack the process and attack me and attack the people who found it. They can't attack any of the substance of the emails, the texts, or the photographs, which are clearly Hunter Biden's. No question about it. And I'll explain that in a minute. So here's how we found out about it. Hunter Biden brought this hard drive in to be repaired, I'm going to say about a year and a half ago. He left it with a merchant. The merchant repaired it. And then tried to reach Hunter Biden to give it back to him. He could never reach him. 90 days passed. At 90 days, according to the agreement signed by Hunter Biden, which I have a copy of, the hard drive was abandoned, became the property of the merchant. A few months later, the merchant started hearing these things on television that the Bidens were saying and was being said about them, and he became very nervous, and he decided he better take a look at what he had because it might be criminal in nature. So he opened it up, looked at it, and his words were shocked. He said he was shocked when he looked at it because he said the pictures were disgusting, they were dirty, they were pornographic, and they had evidence, clear evidence of any number of crimes right on the pictures. And then he said he went to the text and the emails, and even though he didn't know much about the situation, it was clear they were hiding money, laundering money, involved with the foreign countries we said they were involved in. He was particularly angry because I was being attacked about Ukraine, and it showed the whole Ukrainian transaction. So he called in the FBI. He gave it to the FBI. He told the FBI agent that he was afraid that something might happen to him. And the FBI agent told him,
what time period was this?
Very odd statement. So this would be about the time of the impeachment. And he told the FBI agent, I'm very worried. I could be in a lot of trouble here. They could hurt me. The Bidens are very powerful around here. And the FBI agent said, well, if you keep your mouth shut, nothing will happen to you. And that became the attitude of the FBI. For 6 months, they did nothing about it. Nothing. As far as I know, they didn't interview anybody. They didn't investigate. They never called them back. He then sent letters to four or five different individuals, to me, Senator Johnson, several others, I think, Jim Jordan. And my lawyer got a copy of the letter to me originally. And when he saw it, he said, look, I'll go talk to him. I'll vet him. The guy could be a nut or he could be for real. We've had both, right? So Bob, who is an experienced trial lawyer, former assistant U.S. attorney, lawyer for George Steinbrenner, He went to visit him. He spent several days with him. He vetted the whole thing. He authenticated the hard drive about five different ways.
All right.
And made an agreement with the guy. Really? He gave us a copy of it. Yep.
You said that you had been
attacked. And we've been cataloging it since
you
then.
Had been threatened. Right. This is a very big deal in, you know, to paraphrase Joe Biden.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is we watched Twitter and Facebook shut down this country's social media platforms, principal plot. Just to keep that story out of yesterday's news cycle, they relented today.
Wow.
By the way, they also blocked me for a short term and the new one of the installments of the New York Post reports. But right now, this material is so damning for the Bidens. The national media isn't even, the left-wing media isn't even asking questions of it, and they've had two perfect opportunities to do so. Your thoughts about what has to be done now that this material is out? Has the Attorney General called you? Has anyone from the Justice Department? Is anyone wanting to find out what's going on? I mean, the Democrats have used a news story as a predicate to prosecute and investigate against Republicans.
Well, I mean, I put out a text message last night that reads as follows. It's from Hunter Biden to his daughter at a moment of frustration toward the end of this whole cycle. He basically says, no one in the family respects me, despite the fact that I've been supporting the family for 30 years. And Pop requires me to kick back half of my income to him. Well, that really explains the RICO case I've been talking to you about for a year. For years, 30 right. years, the right. Biden family sells Biden's public office. They keep the money with Hunter or Jim or Sarah. They take care of all of Joe's expenses, and they kick back half to Joe. It's a quite typical Chinese corruption arrangement, which is outlined in Peter Schweiger's book. The Chinese use this right. a lot, and that's where they probably learned this. And basically, Hunter Biden is a drug-addicted bagman. For his father.
Now,
it's a very simple, and that you can simplify it to the old-fashioned corruption cases.
Well, you're one of the country's, at one time, one of the country's foremost in U.S. attorneys and prosecutors. Is there
True.
Not enough in all that the New York Post has reported, plus whatever you may or may have, additionally, but is there not enough here for a full-fledged investigation? I mean, we're talking about millions of dollars from China, Russia, and Ukraine.
Given the evidence that I've turned over to them going back to January of last year, I mean, there's enough for a conviction. I would rate this case as one of the easier RICO cases that I ever had, and I'm the one who started the RICO prosecutions. Not only of the mafia, but of white-collar crime and political corruption. This is right. about as easy a case as you're going to get at this level. You've got five witnesses. You've got video confession. You've got now emails that are damning. And you have an explanation of the distribution of the illegal money that Hunter Biden provides. And there are more emails and texts that explain how Hunter Biden divides the money and the father gets some of the money. So Joe, when Mr. Zloshevsky wanted to get his company out of trouble, the most crooked man in Ukraine, he hired Hunter, but that money right. was for Joe, and it was for Joe to save his company, which in fact he did. In February of 2016, the prosecutor who supposedly
really?
Wasn't investigating the case, which is a big lie, but yep.
Rudy, I've got to interrupt you because we're coming up against one of those computer-driven hard
I got
outs.
It.
Your sense of the urgency at the Justice Department to find out what is going on, both to go after social media and big tech for absolutely shutting down the freedom of speech and free expression in this country on this story, on this candidate, and this evidence. that looks, as you say, like a conviction, but worthy of investigation. And immediately, we're 18 days away from a presidential election. Will Bill Barr do anything? Will Bill Barr's attorney, his Justice Department, do a thing? We got 30 seconds.
There have been so many of these that I think it is absolutely necessary that both Bill Barr and Christopher Wray, as soon as the president comes back, sit down with him and explain what the hell they're doing. I mean, you look at the Brennan thing last week. That was hidden for 4 years. We never had to have the impeachment inquiry. Right. I gave them all this evidence. I gave them all this evidence a year ago. They did nothing with it. Ukrainians gave them this evidence 2.5 years ago. They did nothing with it. It's an outrage. We don't have a justice system in this country.
I think the American people. Yeah. I think the American people are, if they weren't already aware of it, this certainly should be the final eye-opener for everybody. Rudy Giuliani, it's always great to see you. Thanks so much for your time. Good to see you.
Tucker with exclusive reporting right ahead. Here we go with Tucker Carlson.
Well, new emails published tonight reveal how Hunter Biden and his business partners helped the Chinese Communist Party gain access to the Obama White House. This is real. The exclusive reporting straight ahead. Well, the laptop that now was famously dropped off at a Delaware computer repair store last year contained thousands and thousands of Hunter Biden's emails and texts and tens of thousands of pictures and many videos. We're still discovering more tonight. But just hours ago, the site Breitbart.com reported on new documents that did not come from Hunter Biden's laptop. Instead, they came from a former business associate of Hunter Biden's, directly to Breitbart. The documents show that Hunter Biden and his business partners helped rich Chinese investors and members of the Chinese Communist Party obtain meetings with then-Vice President Joe Biden. We know Hunter Biden, possibly Joe Biden himself, went on to make a lot of money with the help of those Chinese officials. Why isn't anyone else in the media talking about this? This isn't some made-up nonsense. It's not an October surprise. This is China, our main global rival that is overtaking us. But back to the story. On October 19th, 2011, at 2:08 p.m., an intermediary emailed an associate of Hunter Biden with a pitch on behalf of something called the China Entrepreneur Club, or CEC. It's comprised of senior members of the Chinese Communist Party and other wealthy officials from China. In the email, the intermediary referred to the CEC as, quote, China Inc. He made it very clear that China Inc. wanted high-level access to the Obama White House. Quote, a group like this does not come along every day. A tour of the White House and a meeting with a member of the Chief of Staff's office and John Kerry would be great. The email went on this way, quote, not sure if one has to be registered to do this. In other words, we're not sure if it's legal. Was it legal? Doesn't sound it. But that didn't slow down Hunter Biden or his associates. The email was quickly forwarded to Devin Archer, Hunter Biden's business partner, on November 5th, 2011. On November 11th of that year, Archer wrote to Hunter Biden to tell him he had a meeting with the intermediary and that it was, quote, good. Archer added that it, quote, seems like there was a lot to do together down the line. In a separate email that same day, Archer wrote this, quote, couldn't confirm this with Hunter on the line, but we got him his meeting at the White House Monday for the Chinese folks. We got him his meeting on Monday with the Chinese folks at the White House. Okay. Turns out White House records show that the CEC indeed got the chance to visit the White House on November 14th, just like they asked. But the White House records from that day don't indicate that they met with the vice president. Today, though, Breitbart did a little reporting and found an obscure document from the CEC accessible online that confirms the group did have a meeting with Joe Biden. So why wasn't this meeting with the sitting vice president part of the public record? You remember the Obama White House used to brag about how it was the most transparent administration in history. Every visit was logged, unless national security would be compromised. But this visit wasn't logged, and yet it happened. So Hunter Biden delivered. What did he get in return? Well, we know that Hunter Biden went on to make a lot of money with the help of the Chinese investors he helped out. He and Devin Archer formed an investment fund backed by the Chinese government that was closely linked to the CEC. It's not clear whether Joe Biden also profited from that venture, but other text messages obtained from Hunter Biden's laptop suggest he may have. The New York Post, for example, found an email showing that Hunter Biden may have reserved 10% of his equity stake in a Chinese company for, quote, the big guy. Another Hunter Biden text message suggests that his father was forcing him to turn over half of his salary. More documents like this are coming. We know that. We also know, and we said this before tonight, this was Hunter Biden's laptop. And anyone who tells you otherwise is either ignorant or lying or both. What we don't know is when Joe Biden and Hunter Biden will have to answer questions about any of this. They won't come on this show. For now, our media is content to harass the laptop repair shop owner in Wilmington. It's always the little guy they crush. It's the beat cop. It's the woman who owns the hair salon in San Francisco that Nancy Pelosi went to maskless. It's never the hedge fund manager. It's never the heads of Google. It's never the FBI. It's always the little guy. So they're hassling the guy, threatening the guy who owns the computer repair shop. But it's not clear that the hard drive he turned over to the FBI, it is now clear, is genuine. And that is a huge problem for people who have spent this week pretending it's Russian propaganda. It's not. It's real. Miranda Devine is a columnist with the New York Post. She's been on this story since the very first day. And so for the third night in a row, we're happy to have her back on. Miranda, what have we learned today from this cache of emails?
Well, it's more evidence to show that Joe Biden was aware of his family's cash for influence scheme with shady companies overseas in China, Ukraine, and elsewhere. But what we also know now is that he was actively participating in that scheme by having meetings that assisted his family's activities. And you've just mentioned some with regard to China. We've reported this week others with respect to other places. For instance, we have published an email showing that Hunter Biden organized a meeting between Joe Biden and the number three guy at the corrupt energy company in Ukraine, Burisma, which was at that point paying Hunter Biden up to $83,000 a month for the 5 years that he was on that board. So what we see is that Joe Biden is an active participant. But even more disturbing is there is evidence that that this had an impact. It warped America's foreign policy. And we know that happened in China and Ukraine. And in China, basically, Joe Biden was the point man for Obama, for America. He went easy on China. He went easy on China militarizing the South China Sea. He went easy on China ripping off America's intellectual property. In every way, China did well. America lost out, and the Biden family enriched themselves to the tune of millions and millions of dollars.
That is the nicest summation I have heard. And that's what the stakes were. This is not just a sleazy lobbying scheme. We see so many of those in Washington. They're all wrong. But this was more profound than that. This was a selling out of the country. Miranda Devine, I appreciate your coming on and summing it up for us as you did.
Thank you for listening to our broadcast this evening. We've tried to bring you some clips, but the real scandal is still, focused in on Joe Biden. And also the scandal with Twitter, blocking all these different emails. They really shot themselves in the foot. They committed suicide. But some younger little people that had authority to block emails should have never had it. And they didn't exercise good judgment. And it's going to hurt the company in the long run. Thank you and good night and God bless you all.